Patrick and Frankie, two boys.
Two boys. Is that enough?
It is for me. My wife wants more.
A lot of work, I tell you what. It's a lot of work.
Too busy recording podcasts for more kids, Aileen.
Oh, he wouldn't do it. Oh, he wouldn't do it. What a shot. Over the double, what a pot. Matt McInnes is your new 2019 Clubs New Zealand singles champion.
Hi, I'm Alex Stones, and welcome to episode 38 of Inside New Zealand Pool. So it's been a wee while since the last podcast. It's good to be back. At the moment, we're very much in the midst of the Clubs New Zealand Pool calendar. We've just recently completed the Ladies Nationals, and the Masters is currently taking place in Hamilton as we are recording. So one of my projects during the last few months has been to compile the Clubs New Zealand title ranking lists across the Open, the Masters, as well as the ladies divisions. And that's, I guess, really how today's interview has come about. So very excited to welcome to the podcast the holder of 24 Ladies Clubs New Zealand titles, which puts her top of the tree in New Zealand for the ladies division. So welcome to the podcast, Aileen Barnes. Aileen, how are you?
Very well, thank you. And thanks for having me on.
No worries. And just referring back to the title rankings that I was that I mentioned in the intro there, were you aware that, you know, A, that you'd won as many as 24 Clubs New Zealand titles, and B, that not only would that put you first, but you were first by 9 titles. You were 9 ahead of both Hazel Cook and Kerry Lowe. So were you aware of that, Aileen?
I was not aware of that. I never counted how many titles I had won. I just didn't see it relevant until you pointed it out to me. I was quite shocked. I was quite flattered as well to know that I've won 24. That's also excluding the Pool Association, because back then in the 90s, there was Pool Association was quite heavily involved too. So I was jumping from Charter Club to Pool Association. Yes, I don't know how well that's Pool Association is running here. I don't think it's not here now in Christchurch, and I don't know if it's anywhere, you know, in the North Island.
That's an interesting place to start. What exactly is this Pool Association that you're referring to? Are you talking about the New Zealand Pool Association, the NZPA?
Yeah, Canterbury Pool Association. So they also had tournaments going happening too, as well as Chartered Club. Yeah, so quite a few they like had rankings. I was quite hot. That was when I won in 98 that I won the Oceania, and that was through the Pool Association. And that's on the 9-foot tables, but it was 8-ball on the 9-foot tables. They had nine ball as well, but they also had 8-ball. So yes, and that happened in 98 where I won the Oceania, which I was very pleased. I bet Kathy Parashis from Australia.
And so I guess just to take it back a step, so where did it all begin for you, Aileen? How did you first become involved in Q Sports?
It certainly wasn't in my early days. It wasn't misspent youth or anything like that, because I didn't really pick up a cue till I was in my 30s. And it was only because I was with a partner that used to like to go to the club and have a few drinks. So I just ended up picking up a cue there and playing pool. And somebody said to me, "You are pretty good at pool. You're a bit of a natural." And I didn't really think anything of it. So I did enter a tournament. That was at Tynwald. I think it was 1990. That was the Ladies South Island Singles and Pairs. Who was my partner? Linda Bell. We won the South Island Pairs. And it was like, wow, I've won the South Island Pairs. Of course, it went straight to my head. thinking I was going to win the singles. And of course, I just got blown out of the water because I was just overly, you know, the ego took over and thinking this is easy. But the harder I worked at it, the harder it was, you know. So, yeah. But that was what got me started.
So you didn't actually start playing, picking up a cue, entering tournaments until you were in your 30s, did you say?
That's right. I never used to go to clubs. I never used to, yeah. So, yeah, that's right. So I just started, I got really hungry, actually, very hungry. And I think in those next few years, I saw some players that were really good, and Lorraine Fields was one of them back then. And I can remember, I don't know what tournament I was at, but I can remember watching her play, and I was thinking, I have to beat her to win the singles. She is the one. So she inspired me a lot. She was an excellent player. And it wasn't till 5 years later, you know, like, oh, well, you know, 95 and Cowrow. And I was so hungry. And I had already, you know, I wanted to win the Nationals because I wanted to represent New Zealand. And I had already... I can remember going there, getting the book, because you used to get a book and it used to have the drawer for the singles and the pairs and everything. I went straight to the back of the book. I wrote down Lorraine Fields, Aileen Barnes in the finals, and Aileen Barnes the winner. Shut the book. That was it. That was, and then a week later, that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. So it was, I think it's just, if When you have a dream or a goal and you really work hard at it and you really want to get somewhere with it, you will get it, because it's up to you. It's how you think. It's how you see things. It's how what you believe. And I believed I was going to win it because, one, it was in the North Islands in Cowrow, and they have been holding the singles and pairs titles, the North Islands, for the last, I think, 6-7 years. And I thought, right, we've got to get this. Us, you know, we have got to get this because, and we're in Cowrow, so I'm going to take this home. And that's what happened. So, yeah, I was very, and also I can remember playing the tournament, a lot of spectators back then, a lot. And of course, back then, there was smoking in the club and a lot of smokers. And I can remember having to stop in the middle of the finals and saying, look, I can't play anymore. My eyes are so sore. So we had to have a break to clear out all the smoke. And so I go outside, you know, have a breather, and it's, oh, yeah, and I get my eyes wide. And we started again, and oh, within 15 minutes it was the same again. You couldn't stop it, so I just, you know, carried on. It was funny. I remember that, though. But it was a good win. It was a very good win. And actually, through when we were playing, it was after we'd done section playing, we'd qualified, I passed Lorraine, and Lorraine said to me, this is when we were down to the last probably about 62, about the last 64 or 62, and she said, I'll see you in the finals, right? And I said, you got that one right. So it was just incredible how she said that to me, though, because I must have had it all over my face.
Yeah. So you talked about, you know, having this dream and having to work to reach that dream. What was the hard work consisting of? Like, how often were you playing? How much time were you putting into pool at this stage in your life?
It was mainly in the morning, getting used to playing in the morning, early in the morning, because that's when tournaments started. So I put in 2 hours of solo practice, at least, in the mornings. And solo practice is different to when you're playing. Well, for me, it was different for when you're playing with someone. Solo is just getting your arm in, working control, white ball control, all those things you need to do in stroking a ball and hitting it right, and, you know, reading the reactions, and also challenging yourself to shots that you not very often would play in a match. You know, those ones that you think, oh, what am I going to do with this? It's like, you know, so you play those, you practice them. But when you play with someone, and then I would probably later on meet someone or go down and just social play, but playing with good players and playing the rules, learning the rules, learning to understand how to use them to your benefit.
And I guess when you first started playing pool, this would have predated the combo rules that we know today, right? Would you have been playing those old-fashioned rules, which apparently a frame could easily take like 45 minutes to an hour to play?
I don't know how long games took. I've been told I take long sometimes. So if I'm not in the right zone, I probably do take a long time. But the rules, rules are rules. Because when I was playing pool association, again, different rules again. And so you had to learn. People say, oh, I don't like these rules. Oh, why do they do this? Why do they have that? It doesn't really matter to me. You just got to learn the rules, know the rules. Whether you like them or not, just accept them. Because at the end of the day, it really comes down to the player. And quite often it's the player who's doing the potting that does the winning. So that's how I saw it. So and we were playing like New Zealand, whatever the charter club, the rules were there. They weren't world rules. And I can remember a lot of players always wanting to enforce the world rules because it was a benefit to the good players in New Zealand who go and play overseas to in the championships and that. So it did make sense to play the world rules because I learned that. I learned that I had to win the nationals to be picked to be in the New Zealand team. That was my goal, to be in the New Zealand team and play overseas. But my goal didn't go further than that. I didn't think of winning the world champ. But my goal was to be in a New Zealand team and to play overseas. And to also I had to win the nationals to do that. And of course, when we went over there, with the rules being so different, also the white ball, that was a small white ball, so I had to practice with the small white ball. It was like being thrown in the deep end, really.
So how big were the New Zealand ladies tournaments back then compared to the size of fields today? Has the sport sort of increased or do you think decreased in popularity?
Well, actually, you'll have to tell me that, because what are they? What were they in the nationals that have just gone in the ladies' nationals? How many sections were there? The sections would be about, the numbers of singles would be about 132 players, 130, usually about 22, usually over 20 sections of six. So I know in 95, there was 22 sections of six. So that's 132 players.
So there were 18 sections of six players each at the ladies national singles that just finished up last week. So I guess based on those numbers, it looks as though since your heyday, since sort of 25 odd years ago, the numbers have actually declined a little bit, Aileen.
Yeah, because there were usually about 132, 138 players. So that was 22 sections or 20 plus. It was always a good. I don't know for what reason. I haven't been involved.
So you've mentioned Lorraine Field a couple of times. Who were some of your other main competitors at these tournaments? I guess especially in the 90s.
In 90, there was a lot of good players there. But I know that Lorraine. I played Karen McMullen in 96. That was when I was defending my title. So I bet her. I'm not too sure if she's on the list for many on the title there. Rita Rangiora. No, was it her that I played? I know I played Kerry Lowe. I think that was in 2002 and bet her. That was in the finals. And Nita Knight. She was another good player.
So obviously you've mentioned a number of the ladies' tournaments that you were playing in. Did you also participate in many of the open tournaments? Did you play much against men as well?
I'm not too sure if I did, but I have. I have. Yes, I did. I'm not too sure how. I think I got down. I never did that well. I don't think I can't, to be honest. Like if I didn't win, I didn't do good. So I did well. But I never got, that's pretty tough in the men's. And more so because there are a lot greater number of men players and a lot stronger. There's a lot of also a lot of overseas English men that have come here and playing and not just New Zealanders. So you're also actually competing with players that have been, you know, performing over in England and now they're living here. And so it's pretty tough. But even back when before, like with Stan Matthew days back then, he was there was some good players. I just have to say that their performance was just much better, you know. That seriously, it was much better. More consistent, I'd say, too. Far more consistent. But you are getting players now, especially up in the North Island, that are on par. We've got like JoJo, she's a brilliant player. And I think also those players, like myself, I was never involved or had mentors or, you know, like sponsorships and all that sort of thing. But today, these young ones, they've just got with the support and family, and I think they're so much more involved. They can get more out of it today, you know. It's just so different. And they're so young. They start so young, 12, 13, 14 years. I mean, what an age to get them, you know, and mentor them and coach them. There's a lot more out for them. There's a lot more of that sort of thing going on now, more than ever.
That's amazing to think, like you said, you didn't start playing until your 30s, but by the age of 16, Denise Wilkinson had won her first national championship, and Camelia Cook was 14 when she won her first Clubs New Zealand title. I think Zari Wood might have been 14 when she won her first Clubs New Zealand title as well. So these players were half your age, and they were already winning titles. You only didn't start.
And I think they're also quite involved with, like, the family themselves are quite involved with pool, which makes a huge difference. If you're around it, you know, and it's there. Do they have pool tables? Do they actually own a pool room as well? The Wilkinsons or the Cooks?
I think a few of them were involved in the Pockets Club in Tokoroa, but that's since closed down, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so a lot of family involvement with these young ones, like the names you just mentioned there with Denise. And I think also more sponsorship too. They were getting, you know, and I think they've also competed in the overseas, haven't they? They've done a lot of. I think they've done well, apparently, as well. So, didn't Denise just win the Nationals?
Yeah.
But it was good. It was a North Island, South Island match, so it was good to see. Oh, JoJo was up there. Yeah, so she's another brilliant player. JoJo Coleman, brilliant player. Oh, yes. I remember Lorraine Fields. She entered a snooker tournament, brilliant snooker player. It was just for men only, but they decided to let her play. And I'm assuming that they thought, oh, we'll let her play, you know, it's another entry fee, and she's not going to do too good. And she won it. And the prize was to go and overseas and compete overseas. But because she was a woman, they didn't allow that to happen. So I do understand that she did fight for that and go to court and pushed for that. I don't know what the result was, but that's how good she was. I can remember, you know, like when just before I won the Nationals in 95, I was very keen and hungry and determined and driven. And Eddie Charlton came to New Zealand, and he was touring around, and he was going from mall to mall, and they used to set a table up, and he was just doing a bit of, you know, exhibition show, and you could pay $2 to play him. And I thought, right, this is my chance, you know, I'll meet this great player, and I could, you know, ask him if, you know, I'd like to play you and if you could give me some advice. So I paid my $2, and I followed him around, actually. And I couldn't get into play, so I thought, right, I'll find out where he's playing the next day. So I went to that mall, And I paid $6. That's for three games in a row. So I wanted to play them. So I paid my $6, and then I was called up, and, you know, I'm playing Eddie Charlton, you know. And so this was on 9-foot tables, actually. This definitely was on 9-foot tables. But we were, it was playing 8-ball on 9-foot tables. Well, the first game, I said, oh, hi, Eddie Charlton. I was really nervous and that. And I said, oh, if you could give me some pointers that were really good. And I played him, and I beat him. I beat him, and he was very annoyed. He wasn't happy. And I thought, oh, thank you very much. And I said, look, could you please give me some pointers, you know, anything you could tell me. And he says, oh, no, you're doing fine.
So please leave.
I don't think he was happy that I beat him. No. I don't think he was happy at all. But I've also, you know, Eddie Charlton is quite a, we played in like Trans-Tasman tests, and he was always in the Australian teams and I was in the New Zealand team. So I got to see him a lot. Didn't get to speak to him much, but I got to see him. He was very meticulous, you know, very meticulous, but a great player.
Sort of touched upon this already, but... what are your memories of your first national title going back to 1995?
My memories, I was pretty driven to win this. So that was what it was all about. It was probably all over my face. I can be very, like, serious, very, very serious. And I used to get comments, oh, you know, you smile, you know, you're okay, you know. But people... because I was so hungry and determined to win this, it's just like concentrating and focusing. And some people took it on board, whereas, oh, she's not, you know, I don't know why. And I said, look, I'm fine, I'm happy. And sometimes you don't have to be smiling to show that, you know, I'm just focused to win. And sometimes you don't have to be smiling to be happy. You can, you know, I'm just playing here, enjoying. That's my way. That's just me. That's how I do it. Memories of that was, if I remember, yes, actually, I was so focused that I was probably too focused and trying too hard, because when I was in the sections, I didn't even qualify. And back then, they used to take the top three plus the so many more, six, to fill up the field. That's how they used to do it. And I didn't play well at all. And I actually came in the back door. So I didn't even qualify in the section. I was just the next highest one, the top. So it was like, so the first thing I said to myself in my head, I said, well, okay, last in the back door, you know, last at the other end. And that's how I saw it. So memories of that was really being focused to win that, I'm afraid. I was really serious about it. I wasn't there to have fun. I wasn't there to party, like a lot of them do. I wasn't there to, like, you know, drink up and have late nights. I was very focused. So focused that I used to smoke. And I didn't used to smoke a lot, but I understood that smoking takes away your focus, you know, your focus span. So I stopped smoking, which was a good thing. It's probably not a good thing that I stopped smoking because of that reason. It should have been for health reasons. But I just stopped smoking. That was it. I'm not smoking. If it's going to interfere with me winning the Nationals, I'm going to stop. But it was just a bonus there, wasn't it? Yeah, so I was, yeah, very goal-driven then. And you've got to remember, I hadn't won anything. This was the one. This was the one. This was the one to win. And that was my memory to win. And I bet her 6-3.
This was Lorraine Field in the final?
Yeah. I have to say, back then, my potting, even though I was driven to win and I used to practice and play well, I would still say back then my potting ability wasn't as strong as hers. She was she just used to pot and intimidate the players. So I knew I had to be strategic as well and put in strategy. But when I had to finish potting it, I finished. She was, yeah. She's a very strong potter. She just had one game. Her game was just to pop, pop, pop. She didn't have any other game. But I have more than one game. I have the potting game, but if my potting's not in, I have to do something. I have to do something to slow down. I have to break their momentum or do anything, whatever it is to take to win. And I can remember being strategic, and I could see her being baffled. She didn't know what to do. So that was good. That was good for me, because then I could see that she couldn't just go out and do potting. I could see that I was there. I was in her head. It was like, So, and then I just turned it around when I could and just finished it. Yeah. But I really admired her game. She was very inspirational. She gave me a lot of inspiration. That's why I had to beat her.
And so clearly this has been such a massive goal for you. You've been working really hard. You'd obviously changed, your lifestyle in terms of giving up smoking. So when you finally won that national championship, how did that feel?
It felt good, but because it felt really good, but you see, I was also reading a lot of self-help books, and they teach you to already behave like you've already won it. So I had already won it before I had won it, because of the books I was reading and how they say to program yourself that you've already won it. When I had won it, I'd already done the speech as well. I had already rehearsed the speech. So that's how driven I was to win this. I just won it. I had already won it before I'd won it. Like I told you, I opened the book up. I put her name, my name. I knew that she was going to be in the finals, and my name, and that was how it ended. So I created it. It was almost like I created it before it even happened. So I was a bit numbstruck as well, but very, very happy, very elated.
And then 12 months later, you defended your title. Memories of the 1996 national singles?
Yes. I defended the title, but not really, really believing that I was going to win the title again. I was just there doing my best, still wanting to win, but not as driven as I was for that first one. And hey, I won it. I was actually shocked that I'd won it. There we are. So I was in a different place. But every title any finals that you're in, it's up to me. For me, it's always different. Well, it's got to be different. It's a different place. It's a different space. So, yes, I was very elated that I'd won that. And then I wanted to go for the hat trick, but that didn't happen. 96, I beat Karen McMullen. That was at Tinworld. That was a great celebration. I remember that.
What did you get up to?
A lot of partying going on there.
Did you get the cigarettes back out?
No, but I can remember a time of having a puff, and it was horrible. Yeah, it was really horrible. So, yeah, but no, partied, yeah. We partied all right. too many drinks.
So you then won the double again of national singles in 2002 and 2003, so you had a chance to go for the treble in 2004. Again. Do you want to tell us what happened in 2004, Aileen?
Yes. I was really keen to go for the hat trick or the treble, but we weren't put in. Something happened with the draw. So long story short, entered as I usually have done for years and years and years, and when the draw came out, we weren't in the peers' draws. I was in the singles, but not in the peers, and I thought, well, how can that be? It got complicated. They weren't going to put us in the peers. They said that we had our entry came in late, and I said, well, if our entry came in late, how come I'm in the singles? And there was no comment on that. They couldn't make a comment on that. How could they make a comment on that? I mean, if I'm in the singles, why aren't I in the peers? They didn't put us in the piers. I actually took it to small claims courts and pushed for it. Because what they had done, I felt, was not good. It wasn't good at all. People were saying, oh, this is not right. They can't do that. They can't put you in the singles and not put you in the peers. And you also have to remember, it also affected another person, which was my partner, my playing partner. So we went and we didn't play in the peers. And, of course, I can't even remember how far I got. But I was extremely unhappy and not, you know, probably more focused on, why did you do this to us? Why? There was no need for you to do that. So I actually took them to court and small claims, and it got a bit ordealed. So I pursued this through the small claims courts, and pretty much, long story short, nothing eventuated from it. I could, but it would cost me a lot of money, and there was no point in that. I couldn't see any point in that. So, yeah, it was the Charter Club annual general meeting in 2004 where I wasn't at that meeting, and they had brought upon myself and Louise Kerr, who was my partner. There was three letters that were read out, and there was a lot of discrimination and untruth spoken about us. And they were read out at the meeting, and the Charter Club committee were allowing this to be read out without even us knowing about it. And they were going to bring these letters together. We had to go to a meeting, and then they were going to like reprimand us. And what happened was that we asked for those letters so that we could read them and defend so that we could stand up for ourselves at this, and they didn't send them. So because they didn't send them, they went ahead and carried out what they were going to do. And I had to pay reparation for $500, and I was suspended for 5 years. I can't remember what Louise got. Hers was less. She didn't have to pay reparation, but she may have been suspended for 2 years. I can't remember exactly. So I appealed for it, and to appeal that, I had to go to New Zealand clubs to appeal, because they just took it on their own hands to do what they did, and we didn't even have a chance to even read these letters, even know about these letters, so that we could speak for ourselves and to say, well, this isn't true. It was all defamatory. And one of the letters had already been dealt with, so that was already sanctioned, so they didn't even need to bring that one up. The other two were definitely from letters that they had received, and they were letters from the North Island girls. But anyhow, we weren't given the opportunity to read these letters properly and to defend ourselves, you know, to do it right. So we appealed, and we explained why we are appealing this. And, of course, it was slammed down straight away. It was just because they hadn't done it right, they hadn't conformed with the Constitution, or by the bylaws, it was all upheld, and they had to do the whole thing again, the whole disciplinary thing again. And but they didn't. They decided against it. So it was Clubs New Zealand that said, well, you can't do what you're doing because you didn't give them a fair trial. They didn't give us a fair trial, you know. They didn't conform with the Constitution and the bylaws. And for that reason, they had to do it again and do it properly, but they didn't. They didn't carry through with it. They let it all go. Because it was all, it should never have happened anyway.
And so all of that came about because yourself and Louise decided to kick up a fuss that you weren't allowed to play at the 2004 National Pairs. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, it was because I pursued, because of what they did, and they didn't put us in the pairs, so they came back and did that. Yeah, it was a bit of a turmoil because I think I was spending more time doing paperwork than doing what I should have been doing, and that's just still playing the sport. But I learnt a lot. I learnt a lot, and I got a lot of positive out of it. I learnt that just because you're right doesn't mean to say you pursue it and put all your energies into something like that, because it was tall poppy syndrome. It was simple. It was tall poppy syndrome. And I was told by a lot of people that's what it was. They just needed to cut you down. You were just, you know, I mean, I have to take it as a compliment. It was negative what they did, but I could turn it and say, well, positively, they did it for a reason. They did it because they wanted to stop me from winning all these championships. And tall poppy syndrome means you're attacked and criticized because of your achievements and success, and it makes you stand out.
So looking at the records, I mean, 2003, that was the 2003 national singles was your last national title across both singles and pairs. So did you just stop attending after all of this happened, or did you just kind of
fall
out of love with the nationals?
A lot of things changed then too. They started saying that the ladies nationals should be held maybe twice in like out of 3 years, once in the South Island and twice in the North Islands. And there was all this talk of changing, not just alternating it, north-south, because there are far more north players. And they just felt that, you know, that was just a good time for change. And so there was a lot of other things that were going on. So I honestly, I just couldn't believe it. I was blown away. Why would you want to do that to someone when they can be inspiring for other people? Or, you know, because I was looking in the future to coach and to do all that sort of thing. That's the way it goes. That's life, isn't it?
So tell us about your experience of playing overseas.
Well, overseas were the ordinary, like your eight ball tables, like your charter club eight ball tables. So, but it was the ball that was a different size compared to here. So it's a smaller ball. Therefore, it's a totally different white ball reaction. You can't do follow throughs and it's just totally different. So I felt for players and, of course, the rules too. One thing back then that I pointed out was that you're just thrown in the deep end because the rules and the size of the white, it is a different game. And if you haven't been playing those games and playing the rules and playing with the white ball, well, then you're just thrown in the deep end. The New Zealand team didn't do that well. You know, we did well, but individually, myself personally, I didn't do that well. I'll be honest, I can't remember how well I did. Couldn't have been that good if I can't remember. But the whole experience was good. The biggest thing I remember is just standing there with the national anthem. We were there as a team. It was just such a good feeling, you know, with all the other teams that were there. It was England, France, Portugal, Wales, Ireland, Australia, of course, South Africa. But before we went over there, it was just Australia and New Zealand went to Australia, then Australia went to South Africa, Cape Town. So we did a triangle series, you know, ourselves before we actually went over to England. So and that was good. That was a great experience.
So when you were playing in these World Championships, they were in the UK, were they?
Yeah, they were Manchester. Yeah. So what were they called? They were called it was the 1996 Embassy World Pool Championship. But we didn't do too well overall as a team. it was still a great experience and an honour, you know, to feel with your suit on and your, you know, and hearing the national anthem. It was a buzz. I remember that. That was my goal. That was my goal right from the beginning to do that, and I achieved it. Never thought about winning the world pool or anything like that. It was just being in the New Zealand team and standing there, you know.
So you, I mentioned that your last national pairs or singles title was back in 2003, but, you carried on winning South Island titles right through until 2016. Have you become you're obviously less active on the tournament scene now than you were 10, 15, 20 years ago?
Yes, definitely less active. But the one thing is not playing out of Christchurch. No travelling. I don't want to do any travelling anymore. And a lot of the South Island tournaments that, you know, that, I mean, they always used to be held in Christchurch, most of them, but they haven't been. They've been out of Christchurch, so I haven't been playing in them. If they're in Christchurch, I'll play. Like, they've got, I think the Nationals, the Ladies Nationals is next year. I think they're in Christchurch. Is it Kashmir Club? I'm not sure. I've heard that they are in Christchurch, but if it's in Christchurch, I'll play. Yeah, definitely, definitely play. I just don't travel anymore. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it if the Nationals are here next year.
And do you give back to the game in terms of coaching or sort of mentoring players at all? Have you been involved in that side of Q Sports?
Yes, well, Pauline, she's our president of the pool section at Hornby, she asked me, she was trying to get a similar like pools for school. So after school, and she asked me if I would coach, and I said, yeah, sure. Yeah, I'd love to, but it didn't, she couldn't get enough players, school, yeah, after school, she got a couple, and I said, well, for two, prefer, you'd really want at least four. I said, just leave it, and maybe have a go next year, and see how you go, a bit like pools for schools, so it's coaching for school kids, if they're interested in playing eight ball, nine ball, and where they can get some coaching for after school. So I was going to do it, but it didn't get the numbers. But she's going to push for next year as well. Yeah, and I've got two coaching. I've got the New Zealand back in 1999. I've got the New Zealand coaching level one in 1999. That was a good one to get. And also with Gary Gillard, I did a coaching session. Work out with him and got a certificate for that as well.
What advice would you give to an up-and-coming pool player, Aileen, with all your years of experience and all your titles? What wisdom would you pass on?
What wisdom would I pass on? Be careful what you think, because you always get what you think. I think with the game of pool, it's not like a game of tennis because you don't have time to think. Pool is a different game altogether because sometimes the mind comes in and takes over. If you can be in a zone, what we call the zone, which means no mind, which means you're present, very present, and you're there. You're just there in the moment. That's great. But when sometimes you can struggle with that. So what I have said in the past is what you think is what you get. So be careful what you think. So always think positive. Always think. Always believe. And don't limit yourself. I think we human beings are great at limiting ourselves at what we can do or achieve. And you'll find that if your dream is as big as what you want to make it. And I've even noticed myself that I've limited myself. And I'm not just talking about pool. I'm talking about life in general. So you can apply this to anything you like. So you get what you think. Just believe. Believe and have faith. But don't sit on your butt and think you're going to just get it. It's just going to come to you. You know, you put the hard hours in and the belief that you'll get it. Definitely.
All right, Aileen. Well, I'd like to thank you very much for your time today. It's always good to go back down memory lane and find out what New Zealand pool was like, you know, 25 years ago. Looking forward to seeing how you go, hopefully at the Nationals next year. I know that Denise has just taken down National singles title number 6. You're on 4, so she's 2 ahead of you, Aileen. So you need to win a couple to draw with her now.
Well, she did start 20 years prior to I was in my 30s.
Yeah.
I think she started when she was 12. And these young ones are just, I think, also, time has changed so much where there's so much mentors and coaching and that's pushed on these young ones. It's huge. It's massive. They're just limitless.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's good to see. So I can remember Denise when she was just a little wee short thing when I was used to play pool many years ago. So I'd love to see her next year. Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy to think. I think she's just in her early 30s now. If, you know, if she keeps playing for another 30 years, how many national titles is she going to rack up in that time?
Exactly. So, well, I'm 63. and I started late, so she's going to run over my record by the looks of it.
Brilliant.
So we'll have to do it, how many I won in that many years to how many she's won in that many years, because she's going to run me over.
we'll just stop counting now, Aileen, so you can have the record forever.
absolutely, that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah,
brilliant. All right, well, Aileen, thank you very much for your time, and hopefully see you on the table soon.
Yeah, well, thank you, Alex. Thank you.